Well, once again, let me give you a very warm thank you for your welcome. We're having a great time here. This afternoon we headed down to Rosilli Bay, which is a little bit windy. But had we been back in London, the three of us may well have gone down to the Thames to watch the boat race, which would have been lots of fun. Now, I have two sons. One is here, one is back in London. Both of them enjoy rowing at university. And just a few weeks back, I went up to his university, the other one, to a watching. He was taking part in a competition. It was a lot of fun. His college had three men's crews. They all did really well. I headed back to London. That evening, they had a great celebratory dinner to round off successful terms rowing in style. 1 week later, one of those young men was dead. Everyone stunned. The college community was obviously in a state of shock. The flags were flying at half mast. There was a hastily arranged chapel service, but really no one knew what to do or to say. Now, we are all familiar with death to different degrees, but still, for all of us, there are moments, aren't there, when it just hits us once again. We feel death is such an appalling intruder into our world. When someone is cut down in the prime of life, we feel it all the more, although of course it's just as wrong in someone full of years or even in the womb. We do want answers, but we and those around us, the world, don't know where to find them. We're thrown. This has brought up all sorts of issues. We try to suppress them because there's no answers, we feel. What can you say? Well, yesterday morning in Kerselem, we began looking at John chapter 11. Lazarus fell ill and he died. We saw how Jesus' response was bewildering, even shocking. Doesn't say or do what we expect. Jesus wants to change our view of death, but all the more of himself. So we're going to continue the account in John chapter 11, as we've heard. And these verses give us two things we can say in the face of death. And the first one is that death is devastating. Death is devastating. So that week, my son's college was a very sad place, which is a bit like Bethany, following the funeral, or as it was coming up, of Lazarus. So Lazarus, remember, was Mary and Martha's brother. And in the midst of her grief, Mary comes up to Jesus in verse 32. Now, when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died." Now, those are exactly the same words that we heard Martha say to Jesus. They remind us that when Jesus was informed of how unwell Lazarus was, Jesus did nothing, or at least he simply stayed where he was. Even then, when Lazarus died, we were told, Jesus said to his disciples, "I was glad I wasn't there." Well, we thought about why he said those things yesterday. But Mary's words show us that she too was convinced, as Martha had been, that if Jesus had been there, he could have done something about it. He could have healed her brother. So why didn't he come? And now it's too late. Grief is setting in. The tears are flowing. From Mary, from Martha, but also famously from Jesus. Verse 34, Jesus said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus wept. So faced with what is happening in Bethany, Jesus sheds tears. This is such a poignant, heartbreaking moment for us. But what are we to make of it? The Lord Jesus himself crying. Well, the bystanders at the time drew their own conclusions, verse 36. So the Jews said, "See how he loved him." Well, it is certainly true. Jesus loved his friend Lazarus. But that, if you like, heightens the question of what Jesus had or hadn't done. And those standing around, if you like, the penny dropped, and they express it in verse 37. Some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying?" What do you think they are really asking as they make that statement. It could be taken in a couple of ways. It could be that they are angry. They are frustrated. Why didn't Jesus drop everything and come when he heard the news? So what they are really saying is, well, does Jesus actually care at all? Or the question could be suggesting that, well, everyone knew he healed the blind man, but maybe Jesus knew this was a sickness he couldn't deal with, as in he'd now met his match. So Jesus just hung back until Lazarus had died, and that was that. Why does God allow suffering? We ask that question. The world throws that question at us Christians all the time. Sometimes they ask us as if we've never thought about it or faced it ourselves. Now, to be fair, some ask the question genuinely out of their own experience and want to know why, if there is a God, does he allow suffering? Others are trying to trip us up. It's a knockdown argument, they think, that they assume the Bible has nothing to say on this question, when in fact, all through the Bible, it is addressed, including here. So let's just think for a moment about the argument that might be presented. It goes something like this. If God, your God, if there is a God, is both loving and powerful, surely he'd put a stop to suffering. But the argument goes, there is suffering. So it must be that either God doesn't really care, or, well, maybe he does care, but he just is powerless to do anything about it. Either way, the questioner says, if there's a God, well, who needs a God like that who can't actually or won't actually help when it really counts? So with that question in mind, let's keep looking at these events in Bethany. So Jesus, remember, is weeping, but we really should ask, well, why is he weeping? Because, of course, it can't be, we know, that it's simply because he's now missing his friend Lazarus. Jesus knew, we know full well what he's about to do. Lazarus isn't going to stay dead for long. So Jesus is not crying because he's missing his friend. Well, listen again to what we're told about Jesus back in verse 33. When Jesus saw Mary weeping and the Jews who'd come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in his spirit and greatly troubled. So we're in Bethany. Jesus arrived. He's come up close and personal to these people that he cares for, this family he loves, and he sees the effects of death. So he sees, but also pain and hurt. He's also heard of the unbelief of those people around. And his response is, we're told, deeply moved, greatly troubled, and wept. Now, that this language of deeply moved is really strong. It's saying that Jesus is, well, so moved, he's angry. He's outraged with what's before him. And that begins to help us understand how he has responded. You see, death and all the pain and hurt that it causes, well, it shouldn't be here, but it's because of sin. That's the word John's Gospel uses. What he is seeing in Bethany is the consequence of a world and its peoples turning against its creator. So Jesus sees the hurt it causes, and he knows this is all wrong. This is not how it was meant to be. Death makes it so plain to us that the world has turned against its creator. You may have heard the very famous poem by Canon Henry Scott Holland. Death is nothing at all. I've only slipped away to the next room. I am I and you are you. Whatever we were to each other, that we still are. Which is drivel, isn't it? Sentimental drivel. It's make-believe from a world that doesn't know what to say. It's grasping at straws. But thankfully, Jesus doesn't do that. He doesn't treat death lightly, as if it's nothing at all. He doesn't deny the effects it has on people. He weeps. He feels the awfulness of it, how relationships are ripped apart, hopes are dashed, life is gone. Our world does struggle to know what to say in the face of death. The world feels something of the horror, of course. But at the same time, many would like to say something like that we are just a bunch of atoms randomly floating around the cosmos. But of course, if that was the case, well, death just shouldn't matter. It would just be a rearrangement of those atoms. But when death comes up close, it blows apart that worldview, how hollow it is. It's obviously not right. People are left with nothing to say. So death is devastating. It's like that for Jesus, it's like that for us and for everyone. And Christians can say that. We can say death just doesn't belong in this world. It's wrong, and it shows us our world has gone wrong. Not only our world out there, but we, humanity, have gone wrong. Here we are seeing the effects of rebelling against our Creator. And so we should grieve and weep. And every death is a reminder of how serious it is. Even we could say death is a reminder to each of us of what we deserve. Think of our question again. What about all that suffering in the world? When we get asked that question, the blame is always being put on God, isn't it? As if he's got some explaining to do. But the sobering truth is, it's humanity that's at fault. And the horror of suffering and death should not pin the blame on God, but on those who've committed the wrongdoing and the sin. And it really is serious. We can't just click it away and wish it wasn't here, like a magic wand. And even Jesus can't simply forget about the way we've treated our Creator. So let's say death is devastating with Jesus, and we know why that is. But we can't end there, can we? Because we don't just want an explanation for death. We want something to be done about it. And that's why Jesus goes on and he gives us something else to say. With Jesus, we can say death is defeated. Death is defeated. So we've got to verse 38, which begins by, "Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb." So Jesus wept, as we do, but we can do no more. But Jesus can move to act, which we're about to see. And so verse 39, Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, by this time there'll be an odour, for he has been dead 4 days." Now, I wonder, some of us will remember a footballer, Fabrice Muamba, not that long ago, played for Bolton Wanderers in the Premier League. He was a believer. And there was an FA Cup match against Spurs at White Hart Lane, and Fabrice Muamba had a cardiac arrest. And it's astounding. His heart stopped for 78 minutes. And yet, the CPR did eventually manage to kick in, and he was revived. Those are wonderful stories. We hear them occasionally. But the point about Lazarus is it's been 4 days since his heart stopped beating. And this is an obvious point, but it's worth saying it. Sometimes today, it is patronisingly asserted that people in the first century, well, they weren't as scientifically knowledgeable as we are, that they didn't know when someone had died, which is so laughable. Okay, they didn't have the labs that we had, but they have noses. They can smell. And in Middle Eastern climate, bodies decompose rapidly. So Martha knew full well what she was talking about. Jesus, it's too late. Can't you smell it to help Lazarus? One more objection you will hear often, as I do. People say, if only God would make himself more obvious. If only, they'd say, there's convincing evidence for me to believe. Well, Jesus wanted people to believe back then, but also today. And that is why he allowed his friend Lazarus to die, even to begin rotting in the grave. Because imagine, if Jesus had done like he had done before in John's Gospel and healed Lazarus, what would the skeptic have said? Oh, well, we thought it was really bad, but Lazarus would have got better anyway. No big deal. Well, you can imagine, let's say Jesus had arrived in Bethany just after Lazarus had died and somehow revived him. They'll say, well, he was probably a Fabrice Muamba, not actually dead. We just thought he was. Well, not this time. It's going to be really obvious. It stinks. He's rotting. He is beyond the point of no return. And then Jesus, with this large crowd around him, so lots of ear witnesses and eyewitnesses, they're all there. Jesus does something utterly ridiculous. Verse 43, when Jesus had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." What was Jesus doing? Imagine the large crowd who were there. Lazarus can't hear. He has no ears anymore. They are decomposing. No possible way for that corpse to respond. We're not told how long a gap there was between verse 43 and 44. Maybe long enough for those standing in the graveyard to think Jesus now has lost his mind. The grief has got to him. They might have thought, who stands in a cemetery telling dead bodies what to do? Well, verse 44, the man who had died came out, his hands and feet bound with linen strips and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." So those standing there were left in no doubt at all. A man dead and buried was raised to life. The evidence was walking right before their eyes. So why bother with Jesus, people say to us. They say, "I don't need Jesus. He's not for me." Well, in the face of this unbelieving skepticism, here is news to be declared in all the world that was as relevant today as it was back then. Death, the great enemy of the human race, has come face to face with Jesus Christ and lost. Death has been relieved of its grip on humanity. In Jesus, death is defeated. So if that truly took place, if that happened, which it did, in a place called Bethany in the first century, well, it's almost too much to take in, really. What on earth does that mean? If that actually happened, how should we respond? Well, Jesus tells us. He tells us we are to believe that he was sent from the Father. And again, that's here. So John 11, we've seen Lazarus and Jesus, but there's also Martha, remember. We saw quite a bit about her yesterday. She was the one who first sent the message to Jesus. Do you remember what Jesus first said to her at the beginning of the chapter? He said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it's for God's glory, that the Son of God may be glorified through it." So Jesus said right from the start, death is not going to have the final word here. Which again was a bit confusing when Lazarus died. Martha, acutely aware of that. But has her thinking changed? We saw last time she believed some right things, but hadn't quite put it together with Jesus. So Jesus still wants to help her. So just going back a little bit, we're still at the tomb side. Verse 40, before the miracle, Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" Now, all through John's Gospel, Jesus is about life. The famous opening verses we hear at Christmas time tell us all life was made through Jesus. In him was life. Jesus goes on to tell us he's the bread of life. He gives life to all the world. He then describes himself as the good shepherd who came to give life in all its abundance, even eternal life. And now we have seen in this chapter the moment of reckoning, that Jesus of life has come face to face with death. And Jesus says to Martha, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" We then get to hear a prayer from Jesus in verse 41. So they took away the stone, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you've always heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me." So Jesus, in that graveyard, if you like, led the people in prayer. What might we have expected Jesus to say? Surely he'd be praying for those grieving, for for their loss. But he doesn't. At this point, we hear him praying for something actually all the more important, but it's actually breathtaking. So when everyone you'd have thought is meant to be remembering the deceased, or maybe the close family, all those things, Jesus, in his prayer, turns his attention onto himself. Now, nobody wants a big ego at a funeral. Someone who, at that point, is shamelessly hogging the limelight for themselves when somebody has died. But Jesus, at this point, realizes the best thing for the hearers now is to realize who he is and what he can do, because that will be what can help them most of all. Because they needed to realize, maybe they were asking the question, who stands in a cemetery telling corpses what to do? And the answer is the Lord of life, the God who overcomes death. So we are to look at what Jesus does with Lazarus as they were, and we are to draw the conclusion, here is the Son of God in the world that he made, revealing his glory. When all else take life away, that's what we've done in our sin, he gives life as a gift, generously. And he can even undo the effects of our taking away. We've seen how to Jesus the dead are merely asleep. Jesus has that authority. He can call the dead from their tombs and they respond. It's been well pointed out that such is the authority of Jesus that if he hadn't named Lazarus in verse 43, presumably all the graveyard would have come out of their tombs. Because that is the life-giving power of Jesus. The Son of God doing what only God can do, which is to give life to the dead. So what can we say in the face of death? I'm a minister, I take funerals, and usually as the coffin is being brought into the church, the minister, myself, will say the words from John chapter 11. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though he die, yet shall he live. And everyone who lives and believes in me shall never die. I'm aware not always those at the funeral are believers or Christians. So as they hear me saying those words, I wonder what they think. Maybe they think, well, he's just covering the awkward silence. He's just saying something. They're actually empty, they're meaningless words. They're just soothing the people who are grieving, but surely not a lot more. They might even think he's lying, really, but he's just giving false hope to those who are here. But if you see John 11, we know not at all. Those are words we can and should say at a funeral, because the aim is at the beginning of the funeral to point everyone's attention to where it belongs to be, which is on Jesus. And that these words being spoken are true, even in the face of the coffin, even in the face of death. We agree that death is devastating. We are not denying that. It is not how God designed it to be. It's the outworking of all that's wrong in our world. But isn't it wonderful? We don't only have that to say. This raising of Lazarus shows death has been defeated. And the one who gave life to Lazarus will give life to all who will simply believe in him. Will recognize that he is the Son of God who came into the world to do this glorious life-giving work. Jesus has given us compelling evidence to believe. He really is the resurrection and the life.